Tonic Herbalism. Just as we need our daily bread, we need our daily herbs. Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I am your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator based in Sydney, Australia, and someone who is very grateful for you for joining us today. Me and Mason, a new mate of mine, and if you know you've listened to the show before, you know I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to natural health and herbalism, and you know that's why me and Mason got on well. He's definitely a herb nerd, and you know we can say both of us, Mason, I take quite a lot of herbs. You know, if you've seen me as a patient, and you know, you think, oh, so many herbs you've prescribed to me, and or you've recommended, you wait to see what I take, right? You wait to see what Mason takes. We take a lot because, you know, just like we need our daily bread, our daily food, the herbs, they provide another type of nutrition, a subtle nutrition, a nutrition to the subtle aspects of our physiology, to the places where other nourishing materials like food and certain activities cannot penetrate, access the subtle tissues, these subtle channels. And these herbs, they invigorate us with prana, with this life force. And really, when we're taking these herbs for our intention for taking it, whether we have an intention or not, we're just doing it because the physician told us to, we generate this support from nature. We generate this new relationship with nature where nature is supporting us with its healing powers, its healing potential. And, you know, we should really be taking advantage of the herbs around us that grow around us and also what's available to us because, you know, it's not only what we can get around us. In fact, with Ayurveda, we say with herbalism, that's when you start importing. You know, generally with Ayurveda nutrition, you eat what's local to you. That's it. But when you're ingesting something medicinally, that's when, you know, you start importing things from all around the world and precious materials. So, you know, take these herbs with honor, with reverence, with gratitude. And, you know, when you honor yourself in you deserve the best and you deserve to nourish yourself on many levels with precious medicinal materials, your life really will flourish on many levels, not only on health. And of course, health is the basis of so many things in life. And that is what Ayurveda is, the science of life, the science of this thing of life, this human body, what we're living in. Anyway, we're going to get into it. Mason is really energetic and he's got a great energy and intent for a long and happy life. His energy there is infectious. He's a health educator at heart and he continues to pioneer the way for potent health and a robust personal practice. He's an avid sharer, connector, inspirer, and philosopher. Mason wakes up with a smile on his face knowing that tonic herbs are changing lives. And how are tonic herbs changing lives? Well, he's doing that through his company, Superfeast. He's the founder of an awesome company, Superfeast, which specializes in tonic herbalism. Many people think it's just mushrooms, but it's many other herbs. And this is why I connected with Mason and why we resonated so, because we're both purists. We both go to the pure source. We want the authentic, traditional, native herbs where they're grown sustainably, not cutting crap, not, you know, doing it for business and mass scaling. And this is what we talk about. This is what we go into. And he comes from a classical Chinese background. We also talk about the difference between traditional Chinese medicine and classical Chinese medicine. It's different. Traditional Chinese medicine may not be so traditional as you thought. But we go into that and really he's from the herb perspective, how are they classically, real traditionally getting the herbs and processing them and all the methods. So we talk about that and we talk about a lot about the herbs. So first we start with Mason's daily routine as usual with our guests, and he kind of starts talking about daily routine and seasonal routine and, you know, different energies of intentions, being this was a new year. And by the way, Mason was like off the bat of probably a potent coffee with many medicinal mushrooms and herbs. So you can see his full power. And then we get into the treasures of tonic herbalism, you know, harvesting sustainably and purely, you know, what's the difference in industries when you're dealing with tonic herbs, when you're dealing with medicinal mushrooms, Chinese mushrooms, all which is becoming very popular, you know, what are the difference in what these companies are using and how they're harvesting. So this is tonic herbalism, stuff you can be doing every day. You know, this is everyday herbs we talk about. We talk about the different types of herbs. We did two back-to-back interviews. So after this, Mason interviewed me on his podcast show, the Super Feast podcast, which is a pretty epic podcast. They have fantastic guests. It's one of the podcasts I listen to. I don't listen to that many podcasts. And I'll give you another little thing. Check out the Mason Taylor podcast. That was his old podcast before Superfeast podcast. He's been podcasting for longer than most people have a podcast right now. So check those out. As always, check out the show notes on the vitalveda.com.au. Hit the learn section, hit the podcast, and you'll find references, links. Sometimes we elaborate more on aspects that we talk about. We add in information. And if you enjoy, you know, this knowledge, join the Vital Veda community Facebook page, where not just I, but many others share knowledge. They ask questions, you know, oh, what's this medicinal mushroom I'm finding? Is this edible? I've got these spare mushrooms that I found. Anyone want to swap something? Oh, I'm in Scandinavia. Anyone got some tulsi plant that I can take a cutting and plant it? Things like that. And just asking questions and hearing answers from various people from a various background of expertise, you know, who probably know more than me on that topic, very well may. So if you enjoy this stuff, if this the work we do, leave a review on whatever podcast app you use, and share an Instagram shot and tag Dylan and tag Vital Veda, and also tag Mason Taylor as well as Superfeast, and give us your feedback, what you took out of this show, and make sure you subscribe, because we've got some good episodes. We've had some pretty awesome episodes so far, 2021. I mean, whether it's before this one or after this one, definitely check out the podcast on cancer, From Diagnosis to Empowerment. Such an important podcast episode with an integrative oncologist, a man who's very experienced in cancer, and we go through alternative therapies, and more important, From Diagnosis to Empowerment. Such a powerful podcast episode, which everyone needs to hear, since 1 in 2 men will get cancer in their life, 1 in 3 women will get cancer in life. I bet you know someone who's had cancer. You probably, someone in your family, immediate family even, has had cancer, if not you yourself. So, you know, really, is cancer such a big thing? Is the word being over exaggerated? Check out that podcast with Dr. Paul Anderson. Of course, there's a huge dynamism to cancer, and we just explore some of it, but really intended to do a good overview of it. Anyway, we're going to get into this. Hit us up on Instagram. Let us know what podcasts you want to hear for the year. Who do you want us to interview? Mention that on the Vital Veda Community Facebook page, and enjoy the show with Mason Taylor and I. All right, Mason, so beautiful to do it in person, do a podcast in person.
Isn't it?
Don't get to do it that much. So you probably know in Ayurveda, what's important is the dinacharya, the daily routine, the morning routine. So I've started asking my guests, what did you do this morning? What was your morning routine?
Yeah, I mean, this morning was myself and Tani, my wife, you know, just stayed up chatting, hanging out last night. So I stayed in bed until my 4-year-old, not a toddler anymore, came in. Just had a really nice cuddle with her, to be honest. Yeah. And then, yeah, popped up down to the beach, and it was just one of those magical mornings, South Golden Beach. Went for a nice little run with the dog that's sitting to the right of us, and you can see he's a little bit buggered right now. And then, yeah, just like sat up in the dunes, a bit of nice. My body this morning had like a really nice, like, something cracked this morning. My body's like, I really want you to, like, you know, from the way I'm interpreting it, and just like go through and hit them, get the meridians hit up, and get them, you know, get them vibing, get them feeling. Went through all my major organs and gave them a tap, and especially a nice tap through the lungs there, and a nice massage through the ribs into the heart, and some nice, you know, swings to get the kidneys a little bit of a tap up as well. Just gave the hips a nice big open. And just, yeah, I mean, there's just something about this time of year where, being for us in like really the height of summer, for me, what I did this morning was just have a little bit of a feel into my body, and as a lot of people would have. And I can see how my mind associates the, and it really, I kind of really started feeling the distinction between what I think I need to be doing with my practice and my life during this time that is summer, and what the reality of what my body would like to be doing, which is being in a state of activity without the desire for achieving anything. And I feel like that is what is missed from the Taoist perspective. It's what missed is in what, you know, the associations and the qualities of summer, is opposing that full activity and that, you know, that just like that upward energy, which seems to be goal oriented. If the mind gets its hands on it, its little marrow based hands on it. But what balances it out is sereneness, and being serene, and that quality of serene, and that virtue. I've been able to just be in cruise control, be serene while the fire's raging around you. And so I just really, that's what I was doing this morning. I was quite, like, through everything, I was really meditating on that. And I just had a beautiful cruise after that, went to a nice cafe, chatted to some friends, you know, got here, you know, it's just, it was, I feel like I was on holidays this morning. So got here, got to work, chatted with the Superfeast crew. One of them turned, you know, got some chocolate habanero chilies from wine, just kind of like, you know, and then just having a jam with you. So today what I've been doing is I've been on holidays and just being in that summer fire energy.
Beautiful. Yeah. And do you think also that achievement is related with the new year as well?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. We had a film day recently, and I hadn't made the, you know, so a lot of the time it's like one of those things where my wife comes back and I notice she got a haircut, but I just don't bring it up. And so it's one of those things noticed.
Men do that typically.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I've like noticed this big, well, I know I always talk about Christmas. It's this big, it's not like, it's not that it's wrong that it's in the middle of our summer. It just goes against the natural order, you know? And it's like, you know, it's a winter celebration meant to be, you know, there in the darkest, you know, the darkest night, to, you know, and, you know, to bring some light to people originally, you know, like Santa Shaman go around and bring some mushroom light to people and, you know, help them bring some cheer. And you can see you need that in the middle of winter. That's why I really like Christmas in July and that energy. But we don't need to be having all these resources being poured out of our wallet and our kidneys, you know, and our heart during summer. And that's where people often miss the serene energy, because we're battling. We got so much yang energy we battle, and then we see people needing to heal from summer. So we get to winter. We get to autumn, and people can't get to the point, you know, where they're actually able to let go of summer because we weren't able to have the experience. People think they're missing like the summer weather, but you're the beach weather. You're actually missing your ability to cruise and just simply be. And, you know, everyone comes back from summer holidays. I was just talking to one of my crew out there, and she's just like, we were just on the whole time. I didn't feel like I had a holiday. Big missed opportunity. And that's because there's Christmas, and then New Year, if you look at, like, of course during summer it's perfectly fine to set goals and intentions, but it's like the quality that comes behind that is one of, you know, like summer, we just, you know, we just want to be, we want to look at each other and smile and remember that we're enjoying existence together. Whereas spring is that time where it's a real, you know, the energy is like a real, yes, it's an artist and a creative, but it's also a general, right? And I feel I'm feeling naturally drawn to that general energy where I make, like, I really take stock of my life and goals that I've made and decisions I've made and psychological processes I'm going through, what I'm doing with my business, what kind of father I want to be, and really setting course and realizing through these spring and summer, you know, campaigns, for lack of a better, you know, way of putting it, metaphor, this is what's possible for me to do this year, and this is, I'm readjusting what my goal is over the next few decades. It's big energy in spring, and I've really started taking advantage of it. I'm just experimenting. Like, I don't like being tied down to, you need to do this in spring and you need to do this in summer. But if you feel the quality, these are just metaphors, you feel the quality, it is there. And so I've been really experimenting more and more with it over the last few years, just theoretically going with those flows and those metaphors and allowing that to lead me to the true nature of each season. And people, New Year's resolution energy is definitely kind of rooted in that that springtime vibe. And it completely, for me, it really does go against the grain of that season of summer and fire, where there needs to be that, you know, that cruise control, that just a beautiful enjoyment. Just like, you know, and yeah, you can be going and doing beach sprints and, you know, you can be doing massive hikes. I'm not saying don't be full active, it's full yang. But just allow that fire season just to pull you into that activity. And remember, there's this beautiful cushion of sereneness. And that, if you can settle down to that, it's got like a watery quality, because, you know, in the elemental side, the water is what's grounding that fire in order to ensure that sereneness has got, you know, it's like almost like the reflection of the water of the kidneys in Taoism, that sereneness. So you can look down and remember that ability to flow like water when you're in the middle of that fire season, because if you don't do that, then the fire rages and then you dry yourself up and you burn, you eventually have to sacrifice yourself, and your jing energy and your essence and your bone marrow and your brain marrow. Well, that's long term. And then you see, you know, premature aging and premature degeneration. And that might be a bit dramatic for me to say that New Year's resolutions are like really contributing to that, but you can just see it. It goes against the grain a little bit. In saying that, I like New Year's resolutions, but just it's nice for us to just drop into what we really want to be doing in this summer fiery energy, and then bring that quality to the activity. So bring that quality of just enjoyment and celebration of being alive, and allow yourself being drawn into activity, while at the other side just being like, you know, just cruising, that feeling of being on a summer holiday. That's fully legit. That's not being lazy. That's that serene vibe is completely necessary if you do want to get into flow of what's going on around you, which is the Tao, which is the teacher, which is what's going to help you have everything that we talk about in like tonic herbalism and Taoism and Ayurveda, what the yogis are talking about, whatever, you know, anyone that's got like a focus on ensuring the spirit's coming through and the body stays in a healthy, you know,
like pulling back the bow. You got to do it occasionally.
Yeah, and it's simple, but I know it goes against the grain of what everyone else is doing out there in the West, especially. But that's why I just want to remind people, like, get involved with Christmas. Like, that's just the activity. All it is, though, is bringing a certain quality to the activity. So actually, you can rise above the thing, you know, but it's just learn a little bit more about how your body and your organs and your heart, which is in Taoism, you know, like, I'm not speaking for all Taoism, but in some Taoists see as the archetype of as the emperor. And the emperor just sits there, cool as a cucumber. The emperor's not actually making decisions. It's just the most important one that, you know, just needs to be able to be. And all the other organs serve it, and the emperor ultimately in its calmness, right, and it's in pure existence and its spirit, you know, being in that spiritual bliss, right, and holding that throne of virtuous nature, and, you know, like, not being an asshole and being a nice, a beautiful, pure person, or being your pure spirit, you know, like that in summer, that organ, if you can feel into it, it has the right to be dominant. It doesn't mean you need to not try and achieve anything, you know, it doesn't mean you can't have a little bit of mourning, like, you know, from Taoist perspective, comes through the nature of the qi in autumn is very, you know, we mourn and we, you know, we let go and we release, and, you know, so we can move forward, and we have, you know, we can cut something away so we have fodder and, you know, compost. So there's no rules here. Yeah. You know, it's just all is if you can just slip into that natural ordered chaos of the season. So I'm definitely not a fan for any morality to be placed on Christmas or New Year. And that's a huge one. Yeah. You know, how, like, yes, like, find a way to bring your true, you know, body's nature, and without bringing offense to people. Sometimes you might have to offend people and family. I'm not a big fan of it. I think I personally have, you know, for me, I've, like, in the past been so, like, hectically diving in the deep end of my health. And I'm pretty grateful I've ended up in that extremism, still navigated it okay. But I feel if you are needing to offend people and your family and friends and people that, you know, regardless of how much of a, you know, shithead they are and have been your whole life, or, you know, they've always, you know, they've been there. If you have to offend dramatically, I feel like you're going too fast in terms of, like, taking on a new belief system rather than feeling through it. So I'm a big fan, though, of bringing your own qualities to these somewhat synthetic calendar things.
Adapting, you know, like, seeing, okay, this is the situation, this is what my family are doing, this is what my friends are doing. How do you approach that? You can still, you know, you don't have to full go recluse. And I love what you said in the Taoist, same as Ayurveda, like, summer is, the sun is stripping the heat of the people, and it's where it's more weaker, where we have to rest more. It's time to do less activity, less exercise, less sex, you know, more just relaxing. And and the winter is the time to do all those things, to really get active, because, you know, the agni, inner metabolic fire is huddled in there to keep you warm, and you have this strength. This kapha is there. So,
I mean, that's why, I mean, because it's funny, because, you know, you can see that that warmth, you're naturally warmed up and naturally your fluids are moving and your thoughts moving, and so it's easier to exercise and it's easier to have sex, it's easier to get out there, and it's easier to be creative. And so it's just remembering that when that's not naturally there, don't feel any morality of judgment or guilt come in that you're, oh shit, you know, I meant to be go, I'm meant to be on. It's like, you just enjoy, you know, you just enjoy that rest period. You just flow. Hopefully you're flowing from the good decisions and directions you've taken things from the springtime. Right? That's the way I see it. And I think everyone's got a really beautiful opportunity to reflect right now on how you're handling this flow of the seasons. And you don't need to be obsessively thinking about this all the time. It might come up for like half a day where, you know, the thing, you know, in spring, where you're really thinking about where you're going to take your life and, you know, start making some decisions. But, you know, more so for, you know, if you're constantly contemplating and meditating, then that's going to be much more concrete.
And just living in tune with nature, it'll automatically come. You don't have to intellectually think about it. You're eating with the seasons, eating local food. And, you know, not using aircon a lot, you know, not being in the altered environments, you'll naturally pick it up. And when you're more intuitive, tapped into your body,
that's a good call. The aircon one. Excessively. And that's all we're, you know, it's like, it's an interesting one for everyone listening to this. I mean, like, the nature of excess, like, can't speak for you, you know, speak on behalf of yourself, but I've definitely gone into being excessively health. You know, obsessed. And therefore, in order for me to be obsessively trying to get healthy, and then naturally I'm bringing up all this judgment of my past self of what was unhealthy. And so naturally the tonality of where I was going when I got to excess was, I'm kicking back against something that was, I find ultimately wrong, towards what was ultimately right. And that created a split and a schism that didn't actually allow me to be in my center, therefore to actually be in tune with nature. And so that's like, that excess is something I don't talk about lightly. That's why I talk about patience. I always bring up that like, if you find you're gonna have to be like offensive and rude to people that have been there for a long time based on your new belief system, well, I'd argue that you've gone into ideology rather than self. And just be a bit more patient and take some more gentle steps, because you've probably got a lot to learn, as we've got a lot to learn. And so that's like, just that excess is one to dance on the edge of.
I've experienced it a bit. You know, not so much looking back at the past, that would be quite detrimental, but it's just a stress. It's another stress, because you think you're not stressed, but you actually got that stress going.
Oh, it's crazy at the moment, because we're in this big new world where we literally, you know, we're just like sitting on this platform and looking at, you know, especially from a health perspective, we're looking at every possibility and direction, from ancestral to vegan, various types of vegan, you know, to
overload of information.
We've got Ayurvedic paths, we've got, you know, we've got like, we don't go down the Ayurvedic path, we go the more yogic, or, you know, we go like, I can go down Chinese medicine, or the more folky Taoist. You know, run with mob here in Australia. And, you know, so we're all just delve into all these different sectors. And so that's stressful in itself, you know, of course. You know, I think the current, you know, trend, which is quite good, I think, for influencers in 2020 and 2021, is probably not going to be no difference, is just like, no dogma, no ideology. I'm just going to eat what's right for me, which can be a bypass in itself, because you're like, sorry, you know, where, you know, you're like, you're most likely, you know, a white person living in like some, you know, living in the colony and enjoying the empire, and I'm just going to eat right for my body is like, I mean, kind of like, I'm just like, get over yourself a little bit in terms of thinking of knowing that or being able to have a dictation of what right is. But nonetheless, it's a really good direction away from evolving from dogma
and fans. And
And I think what's going to happen is everyone's going to realize that you dip your toe into all these areas. And one thing I'm not a fan of is going, all right, I'm going to mix, say, Taoism and Ayurveda, and say, oh, when Ayurveda's talking about that, they're talking about that in Taoism, and they're the same, or doing that for like physiology. I'm not a fan of that, but I'm a fan of you, like, so one, enjoying going into different worlds, so the Taoist world, Ayurvedic world, you know. So for me, like, the cleansing practices in Ayurveda is just something I've just, you know, there was a core value that I had, which seems like a good clue that I constantly come back and I can feel it internally, that I have a foundation in myself that I have been most inspired, you know, in through down, you know, through Ayurveda with. And say there's like, in terms of Chinese medicine, there's another in, you know, there's another value and quality that, you know, like a quality attribution that I have to that eating with the seasons, you know. Likewise, I can see looking at ancestral diet, you know, there's another quality that comes up. See, if I'm just eating Chinese, you know, in the way that Chinese medicine tells me to, then there's all these other interests and values that I have that I'm not giving myself a chance to go and explore. And a lot of the time they're going to contradict what I'm learning in, like, say, Chinese medicine, or I'm sure, like in Ayurveda, or in the science of eating, you know, like a diet that's going to basically ensure that you're feeding and growing your bacterial diversity. Mm. That flies in the face of, say, what a typical ancestral, you know, way of eating is now, which for some reason is going towards, like, you know, carnivore and that kind of thing. But nonetheless, you know, I'm not going to sit and be dogmatically and ideologically associated with any of those little pockets or places where I've seen value for myself. But what I will do now is I'll acknowledge, and then I've got my raw food, you know, my raw foodist vegan kind of like place where I went and spent many years, which I've moved highly away from there, but I shouldn't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I should remember I've gone and explored a value that I have there, or a foundation that I have in terms of trying to find my, you know, what the concept of health is for me. Contradicts many of these other places, but nonetheless, rather than, I think what a lot of people do there at that point when they have gone to a few places and realize they're not going to find, you know, the way, they still want to be right and they don't want to seem like a, feel like a failure. And this is where I've been a lot. And so you just go, cool, I'm just going to, like, you know, follow my intuition and listen to my body. It's like, yeah, I don't know if that
works.
You
need guide from a greater intelligence. And that's what we have these traditions for.
Definitely, 100%. You need to keep, like, the humbleness there. I mean, it's just coming from such a place of convenience. Like, if you were out in the wild, would you be able to just, like, I'm just going to go eat whatever I want? You know what I mean? It's like, it's not... So you're not actually we're not actually talking about something that is intuition. You may have picked up some lessons and you're going on with those. Plus with, you know, and rightfully so, you just want to, you know, throw caution to the wind sometimes, and you just want to eat whatever the hell you want, which I think is an important act. You know, there's a part of our body that I find is really celebratory, that wants to have no agenda. I find it related to the vagus nerve, especially connecting all the three brains, the three dantians. You know, we've had an intellectual way in the, like, upper dantian through, you know, coming through the marrow of the brain, wanting to really analyze what we're doing in health-wise, and I think that's right. And then we've got a sensory way of thinking about it, coming from the heart and the surrounding organs, coming through that middle dantian, which needs to be nourished. It's about romance. It's about, in a health sense, it's like the culinary nature. You know, it's like that vibe of having an Italian mama, kind of like living, beating heart and home, which you don't find if you've been, like, a lot of the time, if you're analyzing, you're a biohacker and you're constantly analyzing, this is the best thing for me to be eating. You can feel there's no sensory engagement. The mind's like, yeah, see, I added spices, and that's getting your senses going. It's like, no, but you haven't really got the alchemy of connection of the heart. And then that lower dantian coming through the sexual organs and the bacterial kingdom, like the mass of the bacterial kingdom, that real instinctual, that connection to our survival, doing what we, you know, you feel, you see that come through for a lot of people who've been on Western diets for a long time, and they feel they've, you know, that's what I felt. I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here. And I went, like, looking, I went, boom, fasting, completely off meats and dairies. And that was my, approach. And it's the same way you see people who are vegan. They're like, I got to get out of here. They get drawn over to, like, eggs or meat and something. Like, so that, in that, and you can see how that intellectual self, that romantic self, and that lower dantian instinct, that ancestral survivor, they're going to clash. That's why I like an integrative approach. And I like, for a lot of people listening, maybe you need to be in your extremes, but just remember to come back to center constantly. And then all those little, those value and those places that you've explored, as long as you can bring your three dantians in a place where they can dance together, don't just sit on the, I just eat whatever. You allow yourself to keep on going in that place where you don't know what to eat, you don't know what to do, but you've had enough experience that you're allowing this amalgamation and this personal culture to arise. And the final archetype I kind of talk about is that vagus nerve, being that, you know, that's the what's connecting those three brains. The
largest cranial nerve.
And well, that's a celebrator. I find it being the celebrator, because I find that thinker in our body, that part of ourselves in the health scene is the one that gets a little bit too ignored when you're experiencing orthorexia and extremism and ideology. That part of yourself needs to be non-agenda based. It needs to celebrate. It needs to not be thinking about it. It needs to be able to go enjoy. And so when it gets suppressed, all of a sudden you see a lot of people in that health scene go, you know, effort. I'm going to go and eat whatever I want and drink whatever I want and party. And I need time to go and like do that again. And that can be an extreme kickback. Sometimes that can be beneficial, but quite often the mind jumps on and was just like, look, being extreme in health like that didn't work. I need to just be able to party.
It's like a connection between those three Dantians, right?
Yeah. And the three Dantians and then that ability to then just click into cruise mode and just sell. And this is summer energy as well. Just being able to really just enjoy life, and it's just as relevant. That part is just as relevant as the mind, the heart, and that lower instinctual Dantian. And I'm enjoying looking at this because it's really dynamic. And I'm looking at, like, you know, I've identified, say, like 12 major, it's like foundations of you know, of like of health principles where I've really been inspired. And I look at them and I can see that. In my ideal world, there will be this cosmic overlay and interaction of these health elements that will come together and make me really feel quite confident that I'm doing what's really right for me going forward. And it's the good thing is there's no way to name it. There's no way to project it. And I can talk about it as well. It's not ambiguous. But it's, you know, because it is based on personal experience, it's not something I can, you know, expect other people to really do.
But principles is key. Like, as you said, this is why you can apply any, like, you can experiment with these traditions and why all these traditions work. Like, obviously, they've been going for thousands of years, all these different aspects, and even the newer ones, they help certain people. It's like, in you said you don't like to correlate all these different modalities. However, I think it's, for example, with Ayurveda, it's the principles. So it's not like, okay, eat that food, but don't eat that food. It's simple principles that can be universally applied according to wherever you live in the world. What's your cultural heritage? What are you accustomed to? You know, a Japanese person can eat soy maybe because they've been eating it for generations and they grew up with it. You know, us, we didn't grow up. Maybe it will, you know, irritate our hormones and our thyroid gland. So it's those principles. What are you accustomed to? Where are you in the world? You know, what's your habitat? What's your season? And I think then you can have the flexibility to be and utilize many things.
Precisely.
So let's talk about herbs, because, by the way, I just want to say I don't know much about traditional Chinese medicine at all. So maybe we can speak about some of the main principles. But before that, let's go mainly on herbs, because I've had experience with the herb industry in India, and it's very... And you can let me know if it's similar in China, but it's very corrupt, and a lot is adulterated, and it's actually like the supplement industry in the West. You see, in the supplement, you have, you know, all the vitamins and things. In the India, you also have so many Ayurvedic herbs. You have so many formulations. You of course have the classical formulations, which are, you know, written by the Shastras, the classical texts for thousands of years. A common one that many people know is Chyawanprash, probably the most famous one. So there's very formulas which you'll find maybe 100 companies making that classical formula, but what's the way they do it, what's the herbs they use, all this. And then you have people patenting their own formulas, many companies, huge companies, multi-billion dollar companies, some of them. So it's very corrupt and adulterated. And even some questions from the listeners were, you know, what's it like in China? Another thing in India which is a huge thing is heavy metals. And that's also been really misunderstood and kind of inappropriately labeled that, oh, Ayurveda herbs have heavy metals. The reason for that is because in Ayurveda, we actually prescribe metals. So they're very different. And I'm waiting to do a podcast with my teacher on this just to really get it straight and tell people about these metals. We call them basmas, and they're the ash of metals, but they're purified and calcified in a very specific way. For example, mercury, arsenic, they're used as medicine. But they're completely different to the elemental metal. So they will not show up clinically, but they will show up in the blood tests. But, you know, you examine, you're like, oh, you're fine. You know, I've had a patient who was rushed to the hospital, called in, and we learnt. We didn't tell him. He called my teacher, and they go, how are you even walking? You know, how are you talking? And then they made the correlation, oh, they're on these Ayurvedic herbs. And we give them for the very serious conditions like cancer and strong neurological disorders because of this challenge of, and of course the patient has to fully accept. So then there's that. And then on the other hand, there are heavy metals in India, definitely, mm-hmm. in an inappropriate form due to, you know, not hygienic, essentially unhygienic ways of processing. So yeah, tell me about the Chinese thing, because, you know, people associate China with pollution.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, and I'll back that on. I find China so much nicer and easier to work with than when I have worked with, not because of the people, but I was very surprised to see the way the business was done in India was just, I don't know, it wasn't bad. Like, I was offering, like, Shilajit and, you know, and some other Ayurvedic herbs.
You're selling Shilajit now?
No, because I don't find... it's very hard to get, and even the good stuff, I haven't been able to form a relationship with someone yet who can show me, despite, you know, besides face value, the sustainability of the industry. And I don't believe it is a sustainable industry, Shilajit, and that's something. I won't go anywhere near a herb which is considered even slightly endangered unless there's objective local government and national government regulation of it. And so I need to be able to, like, see that, because otherwise it's, you know,
I'll just quickly add, Shilajit is like, it oozes out of, it's like volcanic, gives out of volcanic rock, and it's very, very powerful aphrodisiac and very good, what we call ricina, which spreads the essence of the body, so builds all the tissues. It's a very strengthening.
Ricina is like it's a tonic herb as well. Yeah, so we'll talk about that, guys. Yeah, yeah. You'll see, like, there's, you know, we've had, like, people just, like, knocking at our door for so long was ashwagandha, but that source constantly dries up for us because it's very hard to get good ashwagandha.
Where do you get?
There's a few small farms from northern India. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but that's the one who, yeah, I've got my partners over in China who spent about 2.5 years trying to make a connection with these farms. And that's where we've kind of, like, crossed over there, and we get it processed in our facility. That's been the only way I've been able to actually work. But the Rasayanas is something, nonetheless, it's been nice to be able to bring the way that Ayurveda discusses the way to support tissue and the essence, and also my favorite description of why you would take herbs like Shilajit and Shatavari and Ashwagandha, Tulsi, is that you to create a foundation and a capacity for spontaneous joy.
Exactly what we were talking about before.
Yeah,
you don't want to be thinking about these things. You don't want to actually be thinking much. You just want to go straight from even the subtlest intention to action.
Mm. Oh, and that's the whole point of this, the tonic herbs and asianas. And it's the tonic herbalism. If we look at Chinese medicine, you see, you know, you were talking about traditional Chinese medicine, and that's associated with the way we experience what traditional Chinese medicine is the West today, and mm-hmm. Which is really beautiful that it's, like, so widely spread. But what a lot of people aren't realizing is that it's a highly westernized and it's a commodity that was, you know, created in the Mao era in the 50s, where it was changed. So we're not actually looking at classical Chinese medicine as it's been practiced for thousands of years. We're looking at modern Western medicine looks at it, and in a way that's almost patronizing, and, you know, it's seen as this little, like, in China as well, it's seen as this just, like, you know, you can go and help people with, like, their pain or some slight, like, menstrual issues, but if anyone has cancer or anything like that, like, you're not legally allowed to treat it in Australia. And it's a lot of the case in China. The traditional Chinese medicine people, they're treating diabetes, they're treating cancer. And although you need to, if you are practicing classically, you need to have the capacity to understand how the patient is associating, you know, or relating to their disease form based on the Western naming and symptomology, and then not get sucked in to think that you need to treat diabetes and cancer, because classical Chinese medicine, as you know, in Ayurveda, you're not treating diabetes. You're going, these are full, ancient, complete systems, Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, that have their own effective way at going through diagnosis and actually following a journey to healing, or, you know, expelling the disease, or whether there's a toxicity or a stagnation or whatever it
greater
is.
Greater pathology. And I'll just add to that, not only are we not treating the disease, we actually don't really look at the disease, we just enhance health.
Well, and that's and people kind of like go, yeah, yeah, cool at that statement, but it's really significant because it's like, well, if you're not acknowledging the cancer and the diabetes, then you're not treating the disease. It's like, let's just remember that that's a really valid form of medicine, Western medicine, and a lot of people are going forth treating it in that way, which is all good. And I'm actively not a practitioner. I'm just a fan of classical Chinese medicine and the people who are practicing it classically. They just because they're not treating cancer doesn't mean they're not treating a core cause and getting to the bottom. Quite often, you know, some aren't skilled enough to do it. A lot of them are. And especially now as we see a resurgence of like that pre-Maoist, you know, Taoist roots, Chinese medicine come through. So there's a big difference between traditional Chinese medicine and classical Chinese medicine. And so when we start looking at like classical Chinese medicine, which is based on the yin yang transformation cycle, the wuxing cycle, which is the five, you know, like for lack of a better word, five elements, and the way that the qi transforms through those, you know, through those organs. That's it. That's like, you know, what's stopping that process. And if you can, even if you're never going to go and, you know, if you've got cancer, even if you know you're never going to be someone to go and see like a classical Chinese, you know, practitioner that's actual classical, not trained, not TCM, not trained at a university in Australia, that's valid as long as you acknowledge that's a new Chinese medicine created in the 50s through splicing together. What I was talking about, when there's this pathology, then we're going to use this ancient formula. You can't do that in classical Chinese medicine. Not to say that you're looking at a very new sapling of a style of medicine that's practiced and taught here in Australia. So even though, just say you have cancer, even though you like, or a disease, even if you're not going to go and classically treat it with Chinese medicine, it's important to remember to get out of that patronizing mindset and remember that this medical system does have the capacity to absolutely treat everything. It needs it, but it sometimes needs buy-in, and it needs your placebo activated, which in the West we are mistrusting because we have because we look down and ruffle Chinese medicine and Ayurveda on the head and like, ah, you little scallywags, you know, just hand anything serious, you hand it over to us, all right?
Yeah.
Legally. So it's important to get to that mindset of acknowledgement of the completeness and just how like hardcore these systems are in treating, like, you know, because quite often you will start to appreciate what they can contribute in longevity. So when we can start talking about herbs, and we'll talk about purity and the way that the herbs are sourced, it all comes down to this philosophy. In order to appreciate how effective through movement practices, meditative mindfulness practices, herbs, having a diet and a lifestyle that's like flowing in a personal culture that's flowing with nature, and how now to acknowledge how effective it is to, you know, these herbs and everything else can be in ensuring that you don't prematurely start decaying and aging and all those things. You need to acknowledge that these systems balanced out with very intentional and effective medical herbs and, you know, medicinal procedures. And so when you get into practice there, you know, they're healing. They're healing, miraculously healing. But it's not miraculous when you look at. They've just got some heavy hitters, and when you know what you're talking about, and you know the energetic anatomy and how to read the body and ask the questions and so on and so forth. So just remember, everyone, I'm not telling you to go get treated of diseases solely and those kinds of things. Just start shaking off the colonization of your mind. Right, that Western medicine is the only one that holds the answers, and you go
the
back
big guns.
To
they're not the only one. Yeah.
You go back to a pre-colonized, in this instance, Chinese medicine, and now we can start to connect to the tonic herbs and Taoist tonic herbs. So the herbs, they are...
Before you go into that, like, I just want to let you guys know who's listening. Like, I've seen that in clinic. I work at a Ayurvedic clinic in India and study there, and then we see thousands of patients here. We see a lot of cancer patients, and they like need that boost, that real invigoration of health. And I also want to add, like, especially with something like cancer, I really think it's a multidisciplinary. So we're definitely working with other practitioners, and we still definitely utilize the Western medical testing system, and, you know, whether it's whatever it is.
Well, that's integration.
Yeah.
That's respect and integration without trying to mash the two together, which is very important because, you know, like I'm not like shitting on Western medicine and the practitioners and the institutions in this instance, right? I do that enough in other ways. I'll do that with everyone. I like shitting on everyone, but including myself. But they don't have respect because they don't understand.
Yes, it's very challenging. I did a podcast with Dr. Paul Lance, an integrative oncologist, very renowned naturopathic doctor, and that's the real hard thing is, you know, oh, as soon as they see they're taking everybody's herbs, no, you have to stop that. It's that fear of unknown.
It's hard in oncology as well. I've done a podcast with Jenny Sansouzi, and she's written a book like The Rebels Apothecary or something. We just went through how to talk to your oncologist about this kind of thing, and because medicinal mushrooms and chemo radio ashwagandha as well actually is like a key one where the research is just, and you know, it's called Fujung therapy in China, where you alongside like hardcore gnarly Western treatment, most notably chemo and radio, you have tonic herbs, you know, where like to ensure that you don't die from the treatment, which is
common.
So logical.
Yeah.
It's so that it baffles, you know, but it baffles the mind to an extent. I get it. You know, there's a laziness when you're just like snuggled up in your institution and you don't want to look outside it. And you also don't have any repercussions if that person dies from the chemo, because then you can just say they died from the cancer and it's not your fault. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't care, but you know, that's an institutionalized mind, and it takes a lot of people waving the banner of change before those people will the institution will slightly change. And then, and I know we can be very cynical about that being owned by pharmaceutical companies and rah rah and all that, and it's all corrupt, but nonetheless, if you can, you know, wave the banner long enough, if the institution can change based on demand at some point, then all of a sudden those minds that are ideologically driven will have then possibly the strength. And luckily we've got those people that are smart enough, even though they've been, like all of us in our own little world, we've all been institutionalized, or, you know, we've all been kind of like brainwashed in one way of thinking. And then if you're slippery enough, or you've got enough emotional or actual intelligence, you can actually have some empathy and respect outside of your little world, and then start having that empathy to understand how it works and how you can integrate. So luckily we've got people on all sides of the fence kind of doing that at the moment. So yeah, so Chinese medicine,
that's a great distinction. Well, I didn't know that, and I'm sure many listeners don't.
Once you start seeing that distinction, then you can start looking at distinction between industry-driven Chinese medicine, right? Traditional Chinese medicine that's industry-driven, because it's got Western, you know, Western pathology and pharmaceuticals behind it. Just common in Australia,
because you got private health insurance associated with that. It's very systemized.
Mm-hmm. And then pre-colonized, mass industry that has, you know, yes, hardcore treatment of disease, right? Has treaties on treating disease with its principles of getting yin yang and wuxing, five elements cycling back through the body through many different advanced treatments. But then also its roots in more shamanic Taoist traditions, which is, where's the sun? Where's the moon? Where's the earth? I'm going to live accordingly to that. I'm also going to keep the chi of my body moving through my organs, through massaging the organs, through taking particular herbs that are considered the superior herbs, the tonic herbs, through movement practices, through drinking good water, good food. Like, God forbid, you know, there's a medical system that doesn't just revolve around disease that revolves around, like, you know, it's somewhere to go. And so it's important for everyone to realize that when we are working with Taoist herbs, I'm working on a small non-westernized, you know, non-western medicinized, you know, style. And that's where I can actually land in sourcing herbs de-Dao. Yeah. And so when we look at huge corporation, we consider this huge corporation, heavy metals, you know, tainting everything, absolute corruption in anything that comes out of China, then it's valid. Same as Australia. I mean, you look at, like, you know, you look at some of the corruption going on in Australia. Like, if we look at, like, you know, decimation, the lack of management of a lot of ecologies here in Australia, and there's a lot of corruption here in Australia. If I look at it from the outside, I could easily say all Australians, like, are fuckheads, and you know, and hate the land, and they hate the indigenous, and they're all corrupt, and they sell their water for, like, sure. But that's just not true. There's so many beautiful people. You can't just, you know, toss a blanket over everyone. And likewise, you can't I can't do that with China, and I can't do that with anywhere in the world. It's
Absolutely.
Just, and so there is still an industry for Didao herbs, and so that's like moving away from, say, like a simple like accreditation, which you're gonna, which I'm not disvaluing, like an organic accreditation, but if again, as people like, you know, for me, like, why aren't you organic? And I'm like, because it doesn't fit. I can't put Western accreditation over the top of something which has been around for much longer than an organic accreditation. So Didao is getting the herb from the original place, and so, you know, when in the original Materia Medica that we have, you know, like the Shendong Materia Medica, so the Daoism may have came from you know, Vedic tradition, but then that Chinese tradition got very good at documenting things. So you see the first like duck's nuts Materia Medica with this is this accumulation of thousands of years of wisdom and thousands of, you know, millions of people trying herbs, which herbs do what, using some, you know, in medicine short term, trying the, you know, trying them to take long term, realizing they don't work, so on and so forth. And so we see the superior herbs, the you know, the upper herbs, middle herbs, and lower herbs come. So the superior, the regular, and the inferior. And so in there we see the superior herbs, which, you know, being used in medicine in this medical text, which is talking about, you know, the, you know, the minerals and the animal herbs and the plant herbs and the fungal herbs, and, you know, the insects. Like, there's the lower ones, these are the ones we use in disease states, and they can only be used short term, and they're going to have, they're very poisonous, so they're going to have, you know, they're going to have, there's going to be a lot of side effects from using it, and this is the instance that you use it. And then in that same book, on the other side of it, you got the superior herbs, which the Taoists were talking about, you know, the messengers from heaven. And you'd find that's what would be all the recluse Taoists. They'd be going to mountains where there were high, you know, a high accumulation of like yes, tea and spring water, and then these tonic herbs, right? And so the superior herbs are the ones that, quite simply, you could use long term to, you know, they say it in different ways, bring lightness to the body, bring flow to the body, bring the spirit through, prevent premature aging, so on and so forth. And so that's where the Taoists would just focus as a part of this integrated larger medical system that's constantly evolving.
Isn't it interesting how the superior herbs are the ones that should be taken as a general foundation?
Well, you know, because they clear...
Because preventative is the key. Well,
they see them as clearing, you know, giving us the strength to go in and do our karmic work. They see it as the ones giving us the strength to prevent disease from rising up in the first place. And the inferior herb,
which is, in Ayurveda, there's an aim of Ayurveda. It's very known. It's a very common shloka. Like, the aim of Ayurveda is first to maintain health in the healthy and then to treat the sick. And, you know, I'd correlate this, the superior herbs with nitya rasayanas. Nitya rasayanas is the daily rasayanas. And I sometimes have conversations with people. I was once at a conference, and I read a conference, and like, you shouldn't need to take herbs every day. You know, like, why taking the herbs? You should have this. I'm like, just like we get our daily bread, you know, we eat food. What about the precious, like, foods? What about feeding our subtle bodies? And we're living in a, you know, modern industrial, highly toxic environment. We definitely need the support from those, those precious herbs. We can't just go on general food.
I'm with you there. I mean, I'm with. And then people go, "You don't need to," and I'm like, "You don't. Yeah, you're right. You don't. And don't. You know, like, you don't have to. Go on your way and do what you personally need to do." I'm just tied to these herbs, in, you know, as you are with the many, many herbs that you have. This like intense, unexplainable relationship with, in the tradition that you've got a relationship with. I particularly the Taoist herbs, as much as times I've tried to go away and do other things, I feel quite calm about. I don't feel as like everybody's got to know about these. It's like as soon as possible, and you know, I'm like people need to go on their own little journey with them. And sometimes getting on Chinese tonic herbs in the beginning will lead them towards, I don't know, like, you know, like foraging for their own herbs in local environments, whatever it is. But like, you know, Superfeast I see as highly as a gateway. But back to the sourcing, in that original text, it was there, it stated the microclimate that these herbs were, you know, if you want the greatest quality, it needs to be in this province, but in this microclimate in this province. So a lot of the times you'll see Didao going, like, I learned Didao off one of my teachers, Ron Teagarden, who's got a company over in the States, who's like probably the only other company I can really you know, be like, far out. I can really like respect it because at the rate that they've grown, they've never wavered on the ethic. And that's what I'm, that's why I've got a slow growth model, because I've watched him do it. And that's why I knew it was sustainable, but I've had to go. It's like, once you get to sourcing, you realize, there's not a lot on the surface of how to do it. You know, the theory's there, and then you got a lot of learning to do in the practicality of actually sourcing from China, so on and so forth. So, but basically, when you look at, you know, all right, we're going to go to a particular province, and this is where you'll see DDAO coming up more and more. And DDAO, it's not something you can go. This is why I don't like organic, because I can go to an institution and buy it. Basically,
yeah,
which I could do. I could definitely go and buy it, and I'd have to tell fibs, because if you're actually doing DDAO, there's lots of little micro farms, and they charge you hundreds of dollars an hour to go out and do their little check and tell me what I already know about each of these extremely rural farms that I'm sourcing from. And so I'm not willing, I just don't need to buy into that right now, although I respect it. So when you see organic, where it does work and where I've got friends doing it and I like the way they're doing it in China, is they've got these big farms, right? And these, like, all these big mushroom houses. And then it's simple to get someone in to come in and certify it. But the way we're doing it in DDAO, so they might say they're DDAO, and good on them for trying if they're in these big houses. But, you know, if you're going to be sourcing DDAO, it's the microclimate part that people don't realize. More so than that, so we're up in rocky crags. We're down in, you know, we're right up in the mountains. We're away from industry. We're away from cities. We're extremely rural. People can, you know, go to the Superfeast Instagram and go back and watch me traveling around. It's beautiful. And the amount of people that were writing to me, because I was doing lives from farms, and I'll do more and more. It's been hard. I mean, obviously, I was going to be there twice last year. It hasn't been the kind of the year to go to China, even though I'd love to be there right now. A lot of people are kind of just having this healing of their association with the Land of the Dragon, right? They've gone past the branding of it and the shitty PR and the government. It's like, you, as a human in Australia or wherever you are listening from, do you want to be judged based on your government? Mm-hmm. You know, just watch the colonization of your mind and the susceptibility that you have. Be aware of it, because there's things to be aware of. Like, have that conversation. I'm not saying be stupid and just throw that away, but be able to have two conversations at once. Right? Don't dehumanize the people that are there holding the traditions and actually holding that dragon energy, like, present, right? There's a lot of people doing it. There's a big resurgence of classical Chinese medicine and Taoism, you know, and the natural order. Good. So, like,
it's not just with herbs, it's with vegetable industry, this organic, these days, organic, schmorganic, that's what I say. Like, of course there's value at times, but, and same with our herbs, you know, like, we don't have an organic certified, geez, we don't even have a... I'm not going to say so much, but like, so much stuff we don't use, because a lot of it is, you know, it's almost like quite secretive knowledge, especially the herbal formulas that I do, because they're formulas and they're by my teachers who have been a family that have been healing for generations, and then where they get them, and of course they're similar, like, you know, as wild as possible, most, you know, into certain forests, and then of course the Himalayas, and then there's some wonderful people doing regenerative work in the Himalayas with endangered herbs, which is fantastic, like Prasanthi De Jagga, who we're going to have on the podcast, amazing man, and yeah, also harvesting at, according to Jyotish, according to Vedic astrology, you know, when do you harvest?
Yeah,
not just in the proper seasonal harvest, but what day and with the certain mantras and intention. And that's what I feel also with the DDAO. You know, like, you have that, it may sound like a little hooey-wooey, but you have that spirit, that herb is in such a powerful place where there's no stress. The more subtle, you know, divine aspects of consciousness are permeated. You know,
the cosmic imprint's very important with DDAO.
Yeah, and I'll just add, in Ayurveda, we have this thing called Divya Aushadhis. So some people maybe have heard of the Soma plant, this mysterious plant which gives you profound experiences. It's part of the Divya Aushadhis. Divya means divine, and Aushadhis is the word for herb. And they say the Divya Aushadhis, if you find growing in the villages or the cities, it's not powerful. You have to get it from the Himalayas, from the high mountains.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and it's like, not to say that that's not, you know, yeah, if it's growing around, get into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like Didao is like, you know, it starts seeing like when the Silk Roads kind of open up, you know, like thousands of years ago, or hundreds of years ago. You see people kind of all of a sudden bringing herbs in from other places where it was easy to grow and there's economies of scale. And so the herbalists would come and they'd try the Shizandra or the Hishawu and they'd say, oh, hang on, something, is this, where's this from? And it's like, oh, it's from... Whereas before, it was just natural. The only place you were going to be able to go, like an abundance of the highest quality possible herb that the healers know has got the spirit in it, and what we'll get to has got the treasures in it. Mm. So that, you know, for us, the whole point of taking the herbs is to get the yin-yang flowing and transforming. Key thing, transforming. And then you zoom in and explore how that yin-yang's transforming is through the wuxing five element, five organs cycles, right? And the point of the herbs is to keep that transformation. Qihua is like, so it's not just cultivating qi, it's through the transformation, which is the qihua, right? You know, that bridging process over from one season to another, one state from another, like day to night, so on and so forth. But there's almost so many intricate, you know, little transformations of qi occurring. So if we can stay in flow, then we naturally see a preservation of those three treasures, main treasures, lots of things that make up who we are as a being, as a human, and everything as well. I'm just going to focus on humans, going to be human-centric. There's three treasures, you know, the jing being our essence, bone marrow, our physicality, our genetic potential. Our qi is our ability to regulate, warm, animate, and our shen, our personality, our spirit. So if these treasures deteriorate, then we see aging and death, right, and decay. If we able to stay within a flow through our yin yang wuxing and our organs, then we see a preservation of the three treasures, jing, qi, shen. And ultimately the Taoists would like to see what they could do to refining that energy and cultivating that energy and see it potentially pour more jing into the system, and so be healthier when you're 70 than when you were 40, for example. And so the herbs in that example I was talking about, when the roads open, the trade routes open, and the people started seeing herbs on record anyway about 400 AD in China. And so that's when you start seeing a split from herbs being basically an energy and a spirit towards being something that's used as a drug. And so at that point, that's when you start seeing people saying, you know, oh yeah, it's Didao, but it's just grown in that province, just a bit closer on a big farm, a bit closer to the city, so it's easy to harvest and it's easy to get labor up there, because it's hard to get labor up into the hills in those little villages. That's why I like Didao as well, because by going extremely rural, we're actually bringing industry to these little villages that have lost everyone to the cities. Absolutely. And so this is like an organic revolution. It is, and it's just practical. I mean, like, in terms of like another element around Didao is, it's not like it's a novelty to keep this tradition alive. It's the best quality herb you can possibly find in Chinese medicine, and that's what Didao is known as. And Didao also means, and this is where everyone, you know, this is the one big one. If anyone, you see anyone like just selling Didao herbs, they're like, yeah, we're organic and we're Didao. I'm highly suspicious that the seed or the spore or whatever it is, the genetics of that herb are not being harvested or cultivated from that microclimate. They need to come from the exact microclimate that they're growing in. Not commercial spore, not commercial seeds. That's the biggest differentiation. And that's why Didao herbs. So like, how do you regulate it? I'll get to the testing of metals and things, but how? It's badass. It's like, they are super effective. And you can feel it. I mean, it's getting to the point where, you know, there's a few of us out there doing like real Didao, and it's a higher price point as well, so I'm not for everyone, but I watch everyone kind of go around, and you know, and I watch people trying to have like pissing contests with each other in terms of competition, and it's like, don't focus on that, just focus on, you know, and be really proud of your particular sourcing or growing philosophy, and realize it's going to have its strengths and its, you know, and its limitations, and there's going to be particular people in the market who it's going to like really resonate with. But the Didao, for thousands of years, it's just the one that the people that knew what they were talking about are just like, yeah, that one. Grown in that way, only spring water, no, like absolute, the absolute most minimal intervention possible. Mm. It's quite practical. And it's not open-ended like organic, like just do the bare minimum and you'll get the certification. I kind of find that, I think I love organic and I buy organic. I use it because I'm like, great, at least I know that it's up to a particular standard. So I'm not shitting on organic by any means. I absolutely think it's a gift. But to de-dow herbs, it's insulting to try and layer it over. But I get people want to know. You know, that's the gold standard. Not in Chinese medicine, yeah. It isn't. So especially when we've got so many little micro farms, we've got our, you know, how do you sustain the growth? Well, those little industries, you know, these little micro farms that are keeping stoking the ancient fire of this industry, they are training other people in the village who are in these areas, who have spring water, who have these places that were still the same as the ones that were described over 2,000 years ago in the Shandong Bensao Jing. And so that is this thread to ancient intent and knowledge and practicality that has been kept alive through the sourcing of Di Dao and grown sustainably. And it's grown in a way where ecologically you can't be destructive because we won't continue to work with you. We might get fooled, you know, a couple of times, but eventually we've got enough people on the ground saying we want a sustainable industry. That's just not like look how good we are. This is like long-term smart for business as well.
Yeah.
Don't destroy the land. That's going to be highly ineffective for our business model if you destroy the land and people who you pass the business on to aren't able to do it in a way that it leaves the land better than when you found it.
Exactly. Right? Better than when we found it. People say giving 1% back to the business, you know, everything 1% we give back to the earth. You should give at least 100% back.
It's nice working in a business that's like got that focus from the beginning. And we've had we've moved from like our ideal province to like a secondary Didao region for, you know, say a particular mushroom because there was
sustainable.
Yeah, like at times, at some point, you just got to face the music and say, like, the industry's growing and that local government is not, say, in this instance with Poria, was not regulating the harvesting of pine, and we saw pine forests being destroyed. And it's just, you know, the thing is, there's a lot of businesses out there that are going to be able to cash in and benefit through just like the decimation of an environment, and then they'll be able to very easily move on. But we can't easily move on. And so it's all, you know, it's like, it's just like, it's nice. We've got a business that's revolved around like, well, that's not, you know, we can't do that anymore. So we'll move to our secondary choice, which is still badass in Yunnan province, where there's extreme regulation of pine harvesting. And it keeps the farms at a certain size, and so they remain family owned. I don't like working with conglomerates. I don't like working with a business that has these farmers under the thumb and makes them grow in a particular way that compromises the quality. You know,
India, we call it the Himalayan Mafia.
Oh yeah, that'd be it. And that exists in China as well. Oh, for sure. And you can, but the thing is, we know it. If we haven't had it happen yet, but we know it. If the quality drops, we try it, we feel it. We're not stupid. That's because we've got herbalists there, you know, testing. You know, when we work with a new farmer, you know, we're testing the herb to make sure it's up for quality. Don't send us that one next time. Can you please just, like, this is the kind of like the state we need the reishi to be in, in order for it to, and you know, and of course getting inspected and that kind of thing. But that's patronizing as well. There's what I don't like. I'm like, we're gonna send someone to like inspect you naughty farmer. What are you hiding from me? The good thing we have is the net where we've got like a lab. The reason I do it in China as well is because there's a full lab at the site where extraction is done, where the herbalists are doing extraction, where there's just like full-time scientists on testing for metals, the correct genetics, aflatoxins, microbials and pesticides and more, ones that we don't need to test for to be TGA approved, right? Or to be inside. And then what we do is then once we get it here, we get it tested in TGA labs to make sure that labs and the Australian standards are saying, heavy metals, pesticides, aflatoxins, microbials, they're all... So it's not like I'm being naive here, but to send someone to be like, I'm inspecting you naughty farmer, already there is such a disrespect then therefore on the herb and a lack of reverence. Doesn't mean you don't get hoodwinked possibly at times, but you can... What happens are the farmers, anyone growing this way, they know that they lose business, the core business and high paying business, if they deviate. And so naturally that you don't go into this industry in order to make a quick buck. And if you do try and make a quick buck, you're out and you've lost your income. What happens is you inherently come across people who have a connection to the herb, the plant, the mushroom, the tradition. These people, they're absolutely beautiful. And that's what then allows the cosmic imprint and conversation between the herb and the elements, you know, to be happening, right? And therefore, you do find that the spirit of the herb is there, and then therefore its proclivity to cultivate Jing Qi or Shen within one's body. That's why Superfeast herbs are badass. I'm not saying there's not other badass herbs and sources out there, but that's why ours are like I'm really proud of them and why they're really effective. And it happens quite often where, like, you know, I like being in an ecosystem of people offering Chinese herbs and medicinal mushrooms, but I also like being that safe bet when things are really going down or someone has a really, like, I need to seriously, like, say, get my adrenals and kidneys, like, back online. They will go, alright, I'm going to Superfeast because I know that there's I'm not going to get any shit, and I'm not just getting marketing, and I can feel it. I don't have to cross my fingers and hope that it's working. I know I can get a sense that it's working because the spirit of the herb's there. And so you know, that person will get onto the Jing herbs, right? Those Jing kidney herbs that get the essence and the you know, the knee strength, and get us from a place of exhaustion to a place where we're on you know, strong foundations. And
when you say extraction is a little confusing, because usually when people say extraction, they think they're extracting one constituent from a herb. And I've seen, like, just explain the whole extraction thing, that 10 to 1 is commonly, I've even seen one of the traditional Chinese medicine or whatever brands, they sell pearl powder 10 to 1, and it's like $60 for a bag.
Pearl powder?
And I sell pearl powder for $80 for 3 grams.
Pearl powder's generally... It's hard to extract pearl powder. I don't know why they'd be doing that. That's normally an exception. And with our pearl powder, it's just microground.
That's like...
probably like you guys.
Plasmas.
I think anyone doing pearl 10 to 1 probably is just doing it for the gimmick.
So, well, what's the deal? We call it Mukta Pishti, but it's like my teacher, they say it's SOS. So whenever someone is having a panic attack, even when someone's unconscious, when someone's having real, like, heart palpitations or strong headache, they just put a pinch of this in the mouth. And again, this is the thing with Ayurvedic herbs, it's not just harvesting the herb and grinding and drying, it's the way we purify it. So, like, a certain way of grinding it with a certain material of mortar and pestle in the rose water, and then the rose water gets, you know, evaporated. So many things. Oh, the preparation of herbs is a huge thing, which you know, you better, even the knowledge has been lost. Like, you know, I can tell you some things after, even like ashwagandha. Like, it's not just simply harvesting the root, grinding and drying it. How do you purify the root? It's not just to purify, it's to enhance the potency. Even shilajit especially, you have to purify by holding the shilajit in a bag over a boiling pot of trifala. Even better than trifala, there's some other combinations we add. Then the steam of that trifala purifies the shilajit. Then you use it.
So I'll tell you, I'm with you on that one, man. Because there's a bunch of things that happen with our Chinese herbs that, you know, and especially the ceremony around harvesting as well, which is like, you know, like, that's something. Like, when you're harvesting ginseng in Changbai Mountain, it's just like, if you don't sit and meditate with the mountain spirit, it's just not as good. It's just not. And, like, I've tried it. It's just, like, it's just not as good. And so they all know in that area, those doing Didao, they know, they sit, they've got their offerings for the mountain spirit and everything, you know. And
some of you listening are like, well, really, come on, like, it's the herb is the main thing. But honestly, like, the consciousness of from the harvester, grower, and one who prepares it, and even administers, is so influential and significant. It makes it. And, you know, my teachers, who are renowned Ayurvedic doctors, they have a treatment which is very famous for women's health. And it's literally a very small amount of herbs. It's mainly mantra, primordial sounds imbued into the herbs and then given. And you can research it. Banana treatment, you can just read the testimonials. And people don't even need to believe in it, or they don't even know about Ayurveda. They come because they hear that, oh, this is going to help my infertility or my period pain or whatever it is.
The good thing is, as well, is even just say you're, you know, just a Western, if you're, say, a Western herbalist or Western doctor listening to this who, you know, say, you know, not to say that, you know,
or anyone who just hasn't been exposed to this.
Well, not even been exposed. Like, I know a lot of people who have these comments and they just don't need to. They just yeah. and like it's not even a, like a want. They're like they enjoy it and they're like cool, but they don't have space in their clinic. The nice thing is you can just leave it there and just enjoy using it clinically and seeing the effects get, which is like you know, and that's that's a nice thing about DDAO. But yeah, Pearl, I love it as well. It's a you know liver cooling smoothing out the flow of the liver, smoothing out you know like it's a you know very very yin herb, and so you know as the liver regulates the blood vessels, it ensures that if the blood's you know running too hot because the vessels aren't getting a nice spiral about them, the yin and pearl brings a pliability so that raging fire as it's moving too fast gets a bit of easier curvature through the vessels and therefore cools down and becomes more of a babbling brook and therefore you see that you know it's been quite effective for any like you know like redness and rashes and you know any of that fire that's being brought to the skin because you know the liver's running too hot, which is a lot of men in the West. I think it's why it's very popular, you know, that's why I've got it in the beauty blend. Just because it's such a beautiful herb for just bring, you know, like for cooling down, you know, bringing the tension down out of the shoulders and bringing some tension out of the mind and out of the tendons. But then also a Shen stabilizer. And so Shen, you know, being that, you know, erratic thoughts and like little personality disorders and, you know, that we have, you know, running wild just stabilizes so that our thoughts can be a little bit more, you know, in the moment. We can meditate a little bit easier, can drop into the present a little bit easier. And so it's known mainly as a Shen herb. And so it's known for building that. When you build your Shen, you're building you're bringing your spirit and your virtuous nature through. Beautiful. So that's like, yeah. And then, but clinically, it's a lot of extreme incidences of ingesting poison. It's used. Mm. It's used a lot. Mm-hmm. But I won't go into that because I'm not qualified to necessarily talk about it. I'm just again, it's just my hobby.
Similar in Ayurveda, it's very good for the Pitta dosha, the fire.
Yeah.
And pearl, moon, manas, mind. Mm. It's very much for the mind.
Yeah, boom. And 10 to 1, it gives us a place to begin that is going to, you know, we want everything extracted out of the herb. Again, when people ask me with, like, say, the medicinal mushrooms, people think I'm only a medicinal mushroom company a lot of the time because, you know, it's like I'm known Mason mushrooms. Mm. But we Chinese tonic herbs is what we do. And so, you know, there's lots of barks and berries and as well as mushrooms. So when we extract, say, people might say, like, how many, like, what's the beta-glucan count in your medicinal mushrooms? And I might eventually get to the point, I don't believe in the testing model of beta-glucan, so I think everyone who gives you a beta-glucan read, I don't think they are giving the full story to the customer and saying that it's actually not complete science. You can't actually measure it effectively. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's something ethically to be sharing with people. To be shared has been like, we think. Mm-hmm. That's like, we kind of think, you know, beta-glucans is especially what you're going to see a high proclivity, we think, as well. Like, it's what's produced when the mushrooms are able to grow through wood on wood. I like mushrooms grown on wood. I don't think mushrooms, for me, long term, should be grown on anything like a grain or an oat or.
Yeah.
I wouldn't personally want mine grown on any other medium, although I respect the industries for their own little pockets of intention. But for me, long term, that's how mushrooms grow. Mm. That's their natural food. Yeah. I'm not, you know, you're the ghee's not like grain fed cow. Well, you know,
now
it's like
making ghee out of palm oil. Like,
geez, all right,
it's crazy. It's really.
You know, yeah, mushrooms. Mm. Mushrooms aren't. They're not grain fed as well. Mm. They're, you know, they're not grass fed like the cows, but they are wood fed. So that's the way we've always been able to get it. But people ask, you know, what's the beta-glucan count? You know, what's the polysaccharide count? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, you know, I've gotten to the point where this is a folky medicine. Yeah. You know, I'm like, well, for thousands of years, eventually I might get to the point, the company's growing, you know, slowly but surely. And, you know, maybe we'll get to the point where we'll find that to be valuable when we work like much more hardcore with some like practitioners, say. But for now, it's just, these are herbs that grandmas and herbalists and dads and mums and health nuts for thousands of years have been adding to their daily flow in order to cultivate stillness of mind and ensure that they can breathe easier and have greater athletic performance and been able to have the strength to develop themselves. So they're moving away from dysfunction and projection towards being, you know, like being like a really, really strong human, right? Yeah. You know, like a really beautiful human, one that like in your older age or when you're 80 and 90 and 100 that you've gone through an integration process where you're no, and I'm going to call a spade, like you're not like what we would deem a burden. right? Exactly. It's that's huge. Like, everyone's like, oh, that's ageist, and you know,
natural birthright.
Yeah, but like, and it's like, it's, if people don't get there, people, I'm not judging people who say get to the point where, you know, they can't, at 90 years old, they can't handle but be reliant and say they, you know, and be stuck in particular stories and projections. It's fine. They have every right to care, and as, you know, as children or whatever, and like, we, you know, I feel like it's in the duty to be there to certain extents. So without that judgment and that acknowledgement for us here, imagine at 90, with whether it's your kids or your community or people around you, to the best of your ability, you continue to be someone who can contribute and not just be that, you know, that person when you get thought of that's like, oh, all right, you know, that's like, that's huge to be like, to be actually become an elder and actually have earned the right to be an elder, not just be an adult. And that's what the why the herbs have been used for a long time. So I don't really care about the, you know, the beta-glucans, and you know, I don't need that to satiate the mind and validate the mind. We're growing in a particular way. People can feel it. The way it's been used for thousands and thousands of years, to the best of our ability, as close to the wild as like as is just logical to do. And so I want the whole herb extracted. The best base for that is to get 10 kilos of herb. Generally, there's some variance. Generally, if we're going to start with 10 kilos, if we take that through an extraction process and it changes with each herb. So in the process, you know, that process is very simple. It's called, you know, it's called hao, and that's just like, all right, Shazandra's going to need a little bit of heat, a little bit longer, or Reishi's going to need a lot of heat, and then they need to be much longer. Take that through a 3-cycle. That's going to be alcohol and water. Shazandra's just going to be water in order to ensure that the mark is completely spent. At the end, the herb is completely spent at the end. And basically, when we take 10 kilos, that, you know, without having any wastage and without leaving anything within the mushrooms, there's a lot. If I focus on beta-glucans, if I focus just on beta-glucans and I standardize to a particular stem of beta-glucans, I'm probably going to go, I'm gonna go up in the amount of beta-glucans that is naturally there and try and standardize to what's above, what's the ratio that's naturally there in the mushroom. Therefore, there's going to most likely be other constituents and energies that are going to also be brought up, and those that are going to be left behind. And so I'm going to throw the natural ratio off. So the whole point, and it's a difficult thing to do on a large scale, but that's why we have professionals doing it, is to spend the entire mark and take 10 kilos. If I want to start about 10 kilos of herbs, and this is just, you know, this is, it's a much more complex conversation behind it. This isn't simple. Generally, we want to start with 10 kilos of herb and then end up with 1 kilo of powdered extract after it's gone through its water extraction or water and alcohol extraction, whether it's 2-phase, 3-phase, different temperatures, you know, different amounts of time, and then spray dried and then ended up with that powder. You want to end up with something spray that's dried, complete.
What do you?
Just a little, it's a little fine, goes to a little, like a mesh that's a particular, each mesh size. This is the big one where kind of like, I really enjoy this creative process, is finding the particular mesh size based on the molecular density that's coming through of each of the extracts. And you spray that through, and there's a little shot of air that
just
evaporates.
You're just spraying air.
Cool. But a lot of the time, this is standardized. This is why there's a lot of intricacies in the way that we're extracting, as there are for a lot of people. We've got a team that absolutely nails it, and so adjusting that mesh size is then going to, you know, for us, it determines how much energetic integrity is going to be left there in the end product. So that's all. That's all fun. And so basically, then you're left with a spent mark, and that's why we kind of sit around that 10-to-1, because it allows us to stay closer to a tradition that we resonate with, is just like, get it all out of there, right? And so then that's what, you know, if you're a Taoist sitting on the mountain, you know, you're going to extract that reishi and that Siberian ginseng or that goji berry to the extent where you got all of it. You're not thinking about this one little thing in there, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's a new science, you know, like extraction of particular constituents. Yeah. That's a very new science, and it's not invalid. And that's where a lot of people growing on grains in the US, mushrooms on grains in the US, and trying to isolate these constituents is like, can't discount it, because they're working in a clinical study kind of like Western disease kind of like thing. But if you are all well and good, probably be like not going towards lab-grown as much if you want to have a non-lab-grown consciousness. Mm-hmm. When you're in a disease state, a practitioner naturally would want some studies behind something, right? And something standardized, because they know you're it's a different setting. We're not in superior herbs at that point.
Mm.
We're in inferior herbs. So a mushroom supercritical extraction can be an inferior herb. It's not going to damage you long term necessarily, but it may not have that same effect of cultivating Jing Chia Shen, warding off aging, bringing lightness to the body and bringing the spirit through the body, so your true cosmic personality can be expressed. You can't expect that from something lab grown.
Absolutely. And what about how long they last in their potency powders? Because in Ayurveda, it changes with type of herb, but some typically say the powders don't, compared to a tablet, if it's kind of binded with some certain, you know, additives to bind it, or even the grithams, the medicated ghees, or the lehams, the honey pastes, that, or even made it into decoction, kashayam, or of course the wines, the arishtas and asavas, they will last, get better with age. And the metals, when they add the metals, it also gets better with age. So how's the potency and how long does it last?
Yeah, it's definitely something, they'll last for, you know, like 2 years is like the shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're keeping them in the cold and out of the sun, they'll last longer than that, in my experience, just based on like me just wanting to not let anything happen to the quality. Yeah. We'll protect it from the light the whole way, and that's why we put it in ultraviolet Muron glass, because that's the ultimate glass to, you know, for preservation or quality of something like a powdered extract that you'd think would be a bit volatile. What mostly they are volatile to is moisture, and so as long as there's no moisture getting in, and then that's why I've still got them in foil bags for those bigger ones if people want to buy a kilo, just to kind of keep the light out. So otherwise it's just like, I would have expected much more of a drop in quality, and it just doesn't seem within that time period. And just it's still, especially with the big bags, I get people to keep them in the freezer and keep them in the fridge. Cool. That keeps you rocking. And the reason I've started the business out and just going these powdered extracts is because I wanted people to be in the, I wanted these herbs integrated into people's kitchens and flows. I wanted them to choose where they're going to be mixing their herbs into, which is vastly different to a clinical setting where they're given medicines in a particular carrier. They get to choose the carrier. So they're using herbs that have the lowest side effects possible, the lowest toxic, the non-toxic herbs, and they're able to play around with them in their own lives with, like, you know, because these herbs are active, you know, it's like people, you know, they're not anything to worry about. They're, over thousands of years, these herbs are ones like, if anything, let's give these herbs to the people.
Yeah.
And let them have a play around. And, you know, that's not to say that you can just take astragalus or anyone can take schizandra at absolutely any time. That's an irresponsible thing to say as well. But at the same time, the things that are going to happen, if it's not appropriate, are going to be minute, right? Unless if you're sick, just you work with a practitioner. I'm not talking about in situations where you're like, you know, you're highly ill. That's a different kettle of fish. But if something does happen, you have a little reaction, it's not going to be too bad, and it's going to give you a little insight to something that's going on in your body, and it's going to, and they, so the herbs have this educational process as you go along taking them,
especially whole herbs, you know, then you can
exactly, you get to do that. But that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted people to do and experience, and they get to kind of like feel them like sitting in the sovereignty of making sure that you are gaining a relationship with how to use that herb.
Beautiful. And the Superfeast website has plenty of awesome recipes. Very tasty, sweet looking things.
Yeah, also and the sweetness. We've got a lot. We've got more and more savory coming up. We had a little bit of like,
I haven't had the biggest look, but it looks, what I saw, those were the ones that caught my eye.
Yeah.
All right. And just lastly, I want to ask you, you know, you hear a lot of whether traditional Chinese or classical Chinese medicine practitioners talk about the kidneys. And it's kind of funny, like almost so many people who will go for the acupuncture appointment, I'll come back and be like, oh, they told me about my kidneys. Oh, my kidneys. There's always kidneys. So, just run us through that. And I don't know, as I said, I hardly know anything about, you know, Chinese medicine. And I think it's got to do with also the ojas, because the ojas is the fluid, you know, that essence of the body is and the kidneys is so important, because it's like with diabetes, you know, if you have that kind of excess amount of fluids and leaving, it's draining that ojas out. Also, it's kind of collecting it and keeping it away.
And that's related to, so the treasure that's cultivated through the kidneys, you know, through the flow of the kidneys is the Jing. We were talking about that earlier. So the bone strength. That's your ability to continue to say, in a Western sense, as you move along through periods of your life, there's particular genetic expressions that will come about and be awakened. You have the power to continue to awaken them versus fall into a deteriorating kind of like gene model, you know, or path, you know, for example. It's associated with our physical endurance, right? Our physical strength, our power, our capacity for power to come through the body, regulating the brain, regulating the marrow of the bone and the bones itself, therefore regulating the marrow that's inside the skull bone, right? And so you can see it's the foundations of life. What happens a lot of the time is people, you know, so it's like stress drains gene. Lifestyle reliant on stimulants, without quality sleep, without quality downtime, which is probably the best. I still think people could reflect on summer and be like, did you just do nothing? Like, did you rest? Really got to meditate on what rest is. Because I know life's busy, and I know people like have got like four kids and, you know, like hardcore jobs and that kind of thing. But you can sacrifice for a particular amount of time when you're young, and you will get over a hump at some point. But I mean, you really got to consider the fact that, you know, what are you sacrificing for? Because you're sacrificing your gene. And what happens is you physiologically start walking on eggshells. And that's when you see, without the capacity for the foundation for gene, what you're giving up is the foundation for all of your organs and tissue to work at capacity. And so when you damage the kidneys, you're damaging the gene. And so the West is considered generally a gene sapping, kidney sapping lifestyle. And I kind of talk about, you know, you see people just like, it's leaking gene is the way we kind of look at it. And you kind of look around, especially you go to the cities, you just see like, you basically can just watch this black essence pouring out of the kidneys being leaked all over the ground behind people. And that's why I think the tonic herbs are so, something so inspiring, because there is the Jing herbs, like Euchomia bark, goji, sustanche, Romania, cordyceps, deer antler, Schizandra. You know, these are all Jing tonics. Doesn't mean they're not, some of them aren't qi tonics and shen tonics as well, but they're, you know, they're primarily Jing tonics. And we've got a Jing formula that is, for most people come for the mushrooms and then kind of get their entry, but close second is people going, you know, it's interesting, because Tani, my wife, she's kind of like, she's here running, we run the company together, and well, she's running it on her own at the moment because I'm taking some time off. I'm having some rest because I don't know how to rest. I'm trying to meditate on it. They arrived and she was like, I was like, I want to call this formula Jing. And she's like, people won't know what it is. And it doesn't matter, because people, word spreads, and people will arrive, because the biggest complaint is people are exhausted and they find themselves walking on eggshells. And if you're walking on eggshells, physiologically, you're not going to have the expression or the flow of your qi or your shen, right? And so we will find that people will arrive in and, you know, with the Jing formula. And then along with that, there, it often correlates with the time where they start to prioritize not having a diet that's directly, because if your diet's shit, basically you extract your qi from your diet and your breath and your air and the sun, you know, as well. But I'm sorry, and the sun and the water as well, to an extent, rather than the breath and the air, which is kind of true. But if your diet's terrible and you're not able to extract enough qi from that food over a few years or decades, then you're going to need to draw on the savings account from your kidneys, which is your Jing, which drains the battery pack. So you're basically spending your superannuation. And then when you hit 40, 50, 60, 70, all of a sudden you're prematurely, you know, premature is a subjective thing. Maybe that's just someone's choice and path, but from a just overlooking place, you know, you're just going to, maybe from my perspective, prematurely hit a point where you start walking on health eggshells. And that's when you see something like when you become unstable, where if you get a little illness, you know, a little broken bone, or, you know, something happens with one organ system, or you go through a breakup or a death, or you get fired or a virus, and you don't act, your body doesn't have the Jing to actually heal and overcome. And therefore you've cracked, that's the straw, broke the camel's back. And that's what a lot of people are living with. And we're under an illusion, because we have drugs and surgery a lot of the time to keep on, you know, plugging the holes. But then we see a quality of life, you know, is diminishing, which you can see. You can see in people, they're just being, you know, just being kept alive, you know, they're slowly dying. And that's the kidneys, right? They're the sage energy as well. So a lot of the time where we cultivate our, we go into real gin cultivation is in the winter. Whereas we know we get to a point, we need to warm ourselves up to a certain extent, but that's the yang jing. When the yin jing needs to be cultivated, and we need to sit in that sage-like energy where we reflect and we allow all those experiences in our stillness to kind of percolate down and be refined into wisdom, which is simply really understanding the experience we've had and ensuring that we're going to use that experience to the best of our ability. And then from an outside long-term perspective, we see that as wisdom. You see someone that's able to like handle their shit, own their shit, not project, so on and so forth. A lot goes into that. A lot of, you know, practice and meditation and therapy and all those kinds of things go into that. But that's the kidney. That's the kidney energy, and allows us to go into that deep, dark place within ourselves where change can truly happen. But, you know, basically, what if we're not flowing with nature, we don't go into a place of a somewhat stillness and contemplation, we actually can't build that water back. Therefore, you know, people will still try and stay active and, you know, in the winter. And that's necessary because what that is doing is it's like it's warming up the waters. It's bringing yang, warming up those waters so that it can start to, in Taoism, go up and nourish the wood energy of the liver, getting ready for the new growth in the spring. But a lot of the time, because people haven't been resting and they've been flogging themselves, and still their lives, you know, and I'm not creating an ideal way of being here. It's just an awareness and something to like navigate towards, is a lifestyle that A, doesn't primarily leak your jing and appropriately flow in through, say, you know, flow through spring, go into that planning hardcore energy and make tough decisions about your life so you can be in a flow state somewhat and be nice and serene and active, naturally active in summer, so you can flow into that point in autumn where you get quite reflective and you can mourn things that weren't necessarily contributing to your experience anymore, and also just get really comfortable with cutting things away and having faith that new things are going to grow without needing to know exactly how it's going to happen right now. And you can see this as like a permaculture garden, you know? And I've missed the late summer season there, but I'm just for all intents and purposes, so that when you arrive in winter, you know, if you are still holding on to summer, oh my God, I just missed summer and I wanted to come back. Well, you clearly, if you were in summer, you were happy to see it go. Because energetically, your body's happy to move on from primarily the energy being in the heart towards the spleen in late summer, where we really create solid, you know, grounding, because we need to land on our feet and on the soil after we've been floating around in summer. And it's nice to know that when we get, you know, we do kind of have an Indian summer up here in Byron Bay, where it gets nice and sticky and humid. Then if you're not honoring that, you get to winter and you can't actually, you know, you're actually healing from flogging yourself, right? And if and God forbid, if you then try and insist on not cultivating yin and not cultivating the growth of, you know, kind of the regeneration of tissue and the cultivation of fluid in the body, then you're in a you start to get into a very dangerous cycle and you start to really run on empty and you don't cultivate your waters. And if you don't cultivate actual wisdom during that time and kind of and actually rest and actually, you know, allow your practice to, again, not be so agenda based, you know, allow yourself to have wisdom in the way that you're practicing and moving your body and meditating and all those things, then you're not going to have many new creative ideas when it comes into springtime. And then when it gets to summer, you're going to try and, you know, like have this faux celebration of life because you're feeling vacant because you don't have any water and your fire is going to grow too big and you won't have the grounding of the water, which you need in order to be serene. Therefore, the fires are going to burn up the water and your jing more and more. You won't have any super. You'll get to a particular point where you actually don't have the bone marrow in order to keep on going in a healthy state. And you'll need to rely on an institution, drugs and surgery in order to remain alive. And that's when it gets very hard to hold your shen, your spiritual, your psychological grounding and your foundation and ability to not become resentful, angry, fearful, resentful, you know, like constantly just, you know, I guess you can, like, an excessive empathy basically, you know, like falling into those kinds of patterns as you get older, which, you know, call a spade a spade, it's going to make you less enjoyable to be around, and your experience as an elder will not be that enjoyable, as enjoyable as it could be.
Yeah, totally. It's all similar to Ojas.
Yeah.
And Pranayan.
Mm.
Yeah. Beautiful. Anything else you want to leave the audience with?
I mean, I the tonic herbs, you're doing so much and you're moving towards a future that's just potential at the moment. And if you have a focus on that intention, it'll guide you easier without having too many high, unrealistic expectations on the herbs, right? You know what it's like. You know, you got to just like, remember, they're just herbs. They're fucking powerful.
Mm.
Like, they're amazing. They're absolutely incredible. I mean, like, I think there's, like, for me, there's nothing better, despite all the ways I could talk about, like, how it's imperfect to have a business doing, you know, what I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. I know all of it. I'm my biggest critic.
Mm.
There's a sweetness in these herbs that were, you know, only for the Taoists living on the mountains, or, you know, only the elite and the emperors for so long. All of a sudden, for them to become extremely accessible and accessible in a way that was, you know, that was there, the quality that was sought after by these people who have been holding this flame of longevity, so we can really do as much work as possible in one lifetime. The fact that we can have those in these new era, in this, you know, whether it's just this, this era or whatever, like this empire or this beautiful opportunity we have, I don't know what it is, but nonetheless, we've got access, and there's something sweet in that. You know, if you can take them off a pedestal, hit your own intention that you have for your long-term health, and then start to dance with the tonic herbs in that realm, you'll start to get to a point where there's less, like, in the beginning, it's nice to have a lot of charge and excitement, and then then keep riding through that. And then when there's less charge, you'll start gaining these really long-term relationships. It's like having a long-term friendship, and these are like the friends you'd want to have in your life a long time. And some really exciting things can happen at that point. And so I just want to remind everyone that, you know, and it doesn't have to be the Chinese tonic herbs. You can lead you down towards foraging and Ayurvedic herbs, whatever. But yeah, from the Chinese herbs, it's just nice to have your backs. And yeah, any questions, just, you know, you just hit up the crew at Superfeast. I mean, I'd say hit me up, but I'm off social media and everything at the moment. Just hit us up in any which way. Tani's actually, really in the business at the moment on social media. So hit up our Instagram or just call us, you know. We're really here to support. And remember that this is about the preservation and the longevity of the system. Mm. We're not trying to be the ones who are the disease healers here, because we work within a complete system that's classical Chinese medicine. Mm. And it's important for you to allow yourself to be within the ancient system and not feel the pressure that you have to, you know, be the healer, as, you know, to that extreme as well, for anyone, whether it's yourself, or you do have to take responsibility, but remember to not feel that pressure and to utilize the practitioners and also utilize the information that's out there. And if you're not sick, now you're on. Perfect time. Really perfect time. So just go and be a champion for your own longevity, and, you know, really consider that 90-year-old self, and, you know, feel into yourself there. And, you know, you're going to change a lot until then. So you need a lot of Jing Qi and Shen in order to undergo those transformations. So get on the herbs, you know, get on them daily.
Yep, get on the herbs daily. I mean, boy, do I love to get on the herbs daily. And if you want to get on the herbs, check out vitalveda.com.au. Check out the shop. We got some precious rasayanas, those herbs which spread the essence of life, those precious substances you can be taking. Definitely also hit up Superfeast. I've been trying the herbs since I met with Mason, and I'm loving the Jing personally. Beautiful taste and feeling that ojas, like an ojas. So, yeah, and don't forget, with Vital Veda, with all the herbs, we donate 50% of every cent of a profit that we get. We donate to people who need medicine, as well as Vedic technology to trigger certain laws in nature to support the collective consciousness for peace and well-being. That ancient technology, that ancient Vedic technology, is called Yajna, and we've spoken about it in a couple episodes with Blaine Watson, when we speak about Vedic astrology, and those are a couple very popular episodes on this show. So check those episodes out. Check out the Vital Veda shop if you need any, you know, if you need any assistance with what's good for you, or what do you think, you feel free anytime to email us or contact us at the contact form of the Vital Veda website. We'll hook you up. Same with Mason and Superfeast, you know, they do that as well. Just reach out to them anytime. And yeah, check out on Superfeast podcast episode that me and Mason did together, again, like a bit with the Ayurvedic side and some other things, like getting all not just internal herbs, but all the lubrication we can do to all our orifices. Okay, my friend, until next time, much love.